Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my love.
This week, we are going back to the old format with a little bit of foreplay before we throw to our conversation.
Warming it up.
We're going to butter all these ears up. Butter, lube up these ears.
Have you ever used butter as a lube of any kind?
Like for fucking?
For fucking or for getting your arm out of the staircase banister when
I've used butter for lube to get a ring off.
Oh yeah.
I've never used butter for my penis.
No.
I bet you'd be nice though.
I wonder if it would be nice for a hand job maybe.
Yeah.
Butter would it be melted already or would you put it on sort of at what state of being would you put the butter on your penis?
It needs to be butter that's been sitting out. Not in the fridge.
Right. But not on a hot summer day sitting out where it's like
no.
Cooling.
No, you don't want that.
I don't think I would put it in my vagina, but I feel like maybe on the back end things might be fun.
Let's look it up.
Like a little food porn.
7 ways people use food during sex that you never should.
Oh. Well.
Don't put grapes in your vagina. That's the subheader of this article.
I mean, why would you? But it can't be that hard to get them out.
If you're bringing food into the bedroom, you want to avoid any sweet spreads or sauces.
Yes, definitely nothing like that.
You know, when it comes to the vagina, Hilda Hutcherson, MD, professor of obstetrics and gynecology, has seen, quote, all kinds of things put up there. Her rule of thumb that is, if anything you put in, you should be able to completely remove intact. But some of the most intriguing foods to use during sex don't fall into that category. Think jelly, honey, peanut butter, etc. Hutcherson has even seen patients whose partners insert the nozzle of a whipped cream can into the vagina and then let loose.
Don't, vagina owners, don't ever, ever let anyone do that.
Yeah. Fruits and vegetables.
Could see that, yeah, easily.
The first, there's that whole what goes in must come out issue, which can be a problem, especially with smaller produce. The sphincter around the anus and vagina can involuntarily contract.
Yeah.
Which makes whatever going in there hard to get out. I don't know what it is about grapes, but I've seen lots of them, says Hutchinson.
Well, they're a common bedside fruit, I think.
Sure. Also, you've got that like kind of sensual, like a bunch of grapes.
That's what
you know,
I mean.
Being like low. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Number four, three, anything spicy.
No.
I mean, that's a fucking game.
Although there is the old butt plug, the ginger butt plug. Ginger root butt plug. Remember
that? Ginger root butt plug.
It's a bit spicy.
That was a long time ago we talked about that. Anything either of you are allergic to? Duh. Oily foods or oil itself. Oil can degrade latex, which is a problem for using condoms or dental dams. Alcohol.
Well,
I mean, you don't want alcohol up your hoo-ha or up your bumhole.
Maybe out of your navel.
I haven't seen a single thing about butter, though. Oh, wait, here we go. Oh, no, that's just peanut butter.
Oh.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, again, peanut butter.
I don't know if I'd do butter, but I might do ghee. I might do, like, clarified butter.
Yeah. How did we get onto this?
We're buttering up our audience buttering, for the...
Yeah, we're lubing up.
And hanging out with our patrons.
Hanging out with our patrons. Patreon.com/German on if you want to watch the foreplay or aftercare segments of our show. Thanks to all of our patrons that have supported us so far. So we have, speaking of patrons, we had a patron that not only submitted a brain boner, which we haven't done a brain boner in a little while. Actually, we did one last week. What am I talking about? But we had a patron submit a brain boner via audio.
I love that.
Yeah. So here, I'll kick it off with the first little piece of the audio.
Hey, Bridie and Jeremy, because this is for both of you. I'm Rianne. I'm one of your Turn Me On podcast patrons. And I felt recently like I just want to throw some love at you guys because I really love you. I just felt like I wanted to say how much the podcast has changed my life and how much I appreciate both of you. I kind of had been dabbling in polyamory for a few years, but I hadn't really figured out what I was doing and what I wanted. And, you know, in tandem with therapy, it was just, there was a lot going on. What I'm realizing now is that I just didn't have language for it. I mean, I'm British, so, you know, we're super, super prudy about everything. And I didn't have anyone modeling, just talking openly about sex, about relationships, about anything other than the norm. You know, even things like masturbation and kind of, you know, like it's completely changed my relationship with my own body, with sex with myself, I want everyone else to have that. But it's really hard because everyone just thinks I'm really weird, which is fine because I am kind of, but yeah. I also have a question for you, but I'm going to save that. I'm going to record that separately because just in case you want to answer it on the pod. And if not, that's also fine. But then you don't have to include all of this long spiel, which you could also include because it's just me loving on you guys. But anyway, thanks for being awesome. And I'm so, so happy to support you because you've changed everything for me. And I love you pretty unconditionally for that.
All right, so that was there was no question there, but there was just a lot of love.
And we wanted to share that too with you because Rianne has a beautiful audio voice.
Really? Yeah, really. There's something very sexy about the British accent.
Mm.
When it's spoken in a very like, I mean, I you know, it doesn't sound like Rianne is speaking in RP. But I bet
right,
she'd
that's
be really
what we
good
know about the British accent.
Yeah, I bet you should be good at it. So here's Rianne's first, so two-part question. Okay, here's part one.
So my question is, was two things, actually. The first thing is about how do you conceptualize your marriage? Like, what does it mean to you? Because there are so many I feel like in a, you know, monogamous heteronormative framework, there are still like certain criteria of, you know, in terms of defining different types of relationships. So like this kind of relationship is a friendship, and this is an acquaintance, and this is a romantic relationship, and this is a marriage, and whatever. And I guess, like, how do you navigate those things in your own heads and with each other? So that's my first, that's the first part of the question.
Go ahead.
That's such a big question. How do you conceptualize your marriage? I feel like I could talk about this for a really long time. So I just
this could be
to...
a long, yeah, this could be a long thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. This could be a long.
we'll be right along. Okay. So in my own head, this is something I actually would say that I think about fairly frequently because, you know, when Jeremy and I got married, when we got married, babe, it was like, you know, pretty traditional in the way that we didn't have any older mentors being like, here's things you should talk about. This is what marriage means. And here are the things that you should know. And like none of that. Everyone's just like, yeah, you're engaged.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we kind of touched on that in our conversation with JP.
Yeah.
The lawyer.
That's right.
I mean, we didn't have any of the conversations going into it.
And I don't think a lot of people do.
No.
I think it is just that moment of like, we're doing the thing. And as someone who generally considers himself to be sort of likes to like live outside the box in major quotation marks, because my outside of the box is still relatively pretty inside the box. But, you know, it's almost kind of astounding to me that kind of happened, that we got like swept up into that. I didn't consider that as like something that you really take your time with to consider. That being said, I wouldn't have made a different choice. Not that I can imagine anyway. Now it constantly feels like uncharted territory. And sometimes I would say that I, worry that we might stray so far from the norm that other people's critiques of like, well, why are you married, might start to like infiltrate or get in the way. But this just occurred to me actually yesterday, and I wasn't even thinking about answering this question, but when I was thinking about like, what is it to life partner with someone? Like when I think of you, Jeremy, it's like I feel like at any time I can like reach out my hand and hold yours. Like I can reach out my hand and you're there as I'm moving forward as a human being on my own life path.
Yeah.
You know, and like no matter what direction I'm going in or whatever, like I know that you've got my back. And I've got your back. And yeah, if I need you or I feel lost or, you know, I have anything, you know, important and big or small and light to process, that you're there. That like it's different than like my long-term friendships, in that I feel like my vow and my responsibility and my loyalty to you is to continue to be there, to have your back all the time. Ooh. And to be in regular circulation in your very busy life, to like to be a present person, to like witness your life and have you witness mine.
Yeah. I think what you're trying to say is I'll be there for you when the rain starts to pour. Mm. I'll be there for you.
Cause I've been there before.
Like I've been there before. Uh-huh. Right. I'll be there for you. Cause you're there for me too.
Yeah. I can think that's my answer. And no, I wasn't actually trying to say that. I feel like pretty, I stand by my words.
It's like you're always stuck in second gear. When it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year. But I'll be there for you. What was the question again?
How do you contextualize your marriage in your own mind?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I think everything you said makes a lot of sense to me. I don't really think. I don't.
Wow,
I,
that's very similar to when we wrote our vows.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fuck off. I don't really think about it. Really. Like I do, but I don't. I don't very much. Mm. It just. It's one of those things where, like, you know. You know, I'm trying to think of a metaphor here. Or a comparison, but it's like our relationship is like something that you cannot explain, yet you fully understand. Mm. And that's how it feels for me. It's one of those things where I know in my gut the feeling and the quality and the smell and the taste and the feel of it all. But I can't explain it. It's like acid. It's like taking acid. Mm. If you've never done acid, you'll never fucking know. And it doesn't matter how hard I try to explain to you the experience of doing acid. Mm-hmm. You'll never know it until you've been in it. And that's kind of the same as our relationship. I just know because I'm in it. Like, so I don't try to contextualize it in a way where I try to make sense of it. I'm in it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to contextualize it. It just makes sense to me. When I start to get questioned about it, and this is where the second question from Ray is going to be going. But when I start to get questioned mm-hmm. about it mm-hmm. from outside influences, mm-hmm. I find myself getting like, it frustrates me.
Right.
Because I'm like, I just can't give you the words that you other person are seeking in order to fucking rationalize and conceptualize what the fuck is our relationship. Because although we are not unique, mm-hmm. our relationship very much is its own thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's lots of other people that have a relationship like ours that is very similar. But like, our relationship does not fit in any kind of box.
It's hard to compare.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure if I was much more poetic and eloquent with words, I would have a way to communicate those types of things, but I just don't. I don't have it. I don't have it in me. And the fact that I feel it and I know what it feels like, I don't fucking have to. I don't have to for anybody. Because I know how it feels. Well, anyway,
is there a second part of this question?
There is. There's a second part. So here's the second part.
Okay.
And the second part of the question is, how the hell do you communicate that to other people? And I don't just mean, obviously you do that like on the podcast all the time, but like, how do you do that, you know, with the people in your life, your friends, your family? And the reason I'm really asking this question is because it's something that I'm struggling with, in terms of, you know, I think I'm practicing something that is closer to relationship anarchy than maybe other structures of poly. But of course, no one fucking knows what that is, right? So trying to explain that, you know, some of the most important relationships in my life are not sexual, but are intensely romantic and intimate. I just don't have language for it. And what I end up coming out of conversations with friends, particularly, and family, is that I feel invalidated. I feel like maybe I'm just very confused, which is not true, because I know exactly on like a feeling level what those relationships are.
Yeah.
And I know why they're important, and I know that they're exactly what they're supposed to be at this time, because they're also incredibly fluid, and I know that they, you know, evolve and change, and I love that. But I just don't know how to talk about it. And I don't know how to get people to, I guess in a sense, it's about getting others to take those relationships seriously, because I feel like in their heads, they're just going, that's just a friendship. Like, and I'm as if I'm kind of have some delusion about what the relationship is. So that's kind of the place that my question is coming from. And also just, you know, intense curiosity, because I love listening to you two talk about your relationship. So yeah, if that's something that you wanted to speak to, I would just love to hear it.
Yeah. So, okay. So this is perfect. When I do try to communicate it, I'll use this as an example, right? Like me and Leah, for example. Mm-hmm. Leah's not polyamorous and never has been. We get into a relationship. She's trying to conceptualize what the fuck's going on between mm-hmm. you and me. Mm-hmm. Where does she fit in all this? Where do you fit in all this? Mm-hmm. And those conversations that we have about this, which have been several, always end up with me basically trying to express, okay, here are like the tangibles in this, which are my wife by technicality, my wife legally is you, mm-hmm. is Bridie. Mm-hmm. But that does not look like what most other people would say their wife looks like. Mm-hmm. In the way that their relationship works. And so here are the things that are a part of your and I relationship mm-hmm. that are consistent and will remain the same. Mm-hmm. Things like finances, things like work, things like our friendship, things like intimacy. Here are things that don't exist that oftentimes do exist within a marriage. Sexuality. We're not sexual together. We don't have a sexual relationship. Like a domestic situation, at least now, right? We no longer live together. I guess you could even add in there like majority of like social time spent. You know, we don't like we go to events. We used to go to events and stuff like BC mm-hmm. before COVID.
Yeah.
But like outside of that.
Different friend groups.
Yeah. Different friend groups for the most part. And like. So, like, those are the things that I try to explain when I feel like, okay, I have to explain myself in this situation. But other than that, I don't fucking have to explain myself to fucking anyone.
Mm.
Because you just said it yourself there, Rhea. You feel it.
Yeah.
You know what you feel. And you're going to have moments in your life where people are confused and they don't understand it and they don't get it because it doesn't line up. This doesn't fit the box that they've learned to think and see all relationships through this lens. And when it doesn't line up with that lens, you might have questions that come your way that for sure may bring up feelings of discomfort for yourself because it makes you question whether or not you are normal or not. But those are the moments where you got to decide. Are you sticking with your belief in what you feel? Or are you going to sway and question yourself, like what fucking makes sense to you? But if it makes sense to you, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If it makes sense to you, it doesn't matter who else it makes sense for or doesn't.
Yeah, I think too, the more you try to explain something, the further away you get from actually describing it, like yeah. the more words you try to use, probably the more confusing it is for other people.
But I do. I want to bring up the this notion of relationship anarchy.
Yeah.
And there's this really great graphic called the Relationship Anarchy Smorgasbord.
Oh, I've heard of this.
So it says, form your relationship by picking and agreeing on which traits you want to share with your partner. Mm. You can go big or small. There's no wrong way to do it. As long as you are agreeing together what you want and don't want in this relationship, remember, you can always change it up later. Mm. And so it has like a list of these things that you can share in a relationship with someone.
Okay.
Right? So romantic, chemical reaction, feelings of love. I would say we have that.
Mm-hmm.
Friendship, companionship, playfulness, shared activity, interest.
Yeah.
We have that. Domestic, sharing a dwelling or a home. We don't have that.
No. Although my home is always your home.
And sure. I feel right. at home. Of course.
Your home.
And yes. But we don't share a home.
No.
Sexual, involving genitals, anus, or orgasms. We do not share that. So we share romance.
Yeah.
But we don't share sex.
Mm-hmm.
Physical touch, dance, sex, body contact, cuddles, hugs, pets, hand-holding, massage.
Less since COVID, because I don't want, but I like to pick your, if you ever stop letting me pick your blackheads, I'm going to be really bummed out.
Yeah, and you're, you know, and like.
I'll be your student.
Like we don't like cuddle, but we hug and we, mm-hmm. and you know, like you were working on me a massage the other day, like those types of things. So it's like there, you know, some things within physical touch, some things not.
Yeah.
You know, it's, again, it's like romantic, but not sexual, but physical touch, but not like it's okay. life partner, sharing goals, long term or life, embracing change in each other. I would say 100%.
Yeah.
Caregiver, giving care to and receiving care from. We also have that. Co-caregiver, children, animals, plants, family. Sick/elderly. We used to have Bigby.
Yeah.
We have the cat. I guess still we co-caregive the cat.
Yeah. I would happily,
you would take care of Donut any day.
I would. And Rose.
And
maybe.
I, Rose. I would take care of Rose.
In your little tiny condo.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like a bull in a china shop.
Emotional intimacy, sharing and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
We do that. Emotional support, listening, being asked for advice, confidant.
Yeah.
We have that. Social partners, seen together, events, friends, family, work, social media, sort of, you know, kind of.
I stopped going out at night. I think
that's a big thing.
That was way well before COVID.
That's a big thing. Financial, sharing money, accounts, payments, yada, yada. Kink, power dynamics, collaborative partners, and business partners. So again, it's like.
We took a fair number of those boxes.
We took a bunch of those boxes off. Yeah. And Leah and I also tick a bunch of those boxes off.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of boxes that we don't tick off.
Yeah.
Again, Leah and I, we don't have a domestic partnership. We're not collaborative partners, at mm-hmm. least right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not business partners, mm-hmm. at least right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really financially bound.
How would you possibly, how would you?
Pretty much all the other ones we're right. pretty like locked in on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, to other people, and to like both your point and Rian, the not knowing how to explain it to people, not needing to explain it to people, and also not worrying about what other people are thinking, because you did bring that up, just the feeling like, oh, they're thinking this is just a friendship, or this is what, you'll never, ever, one, be able to know what someone is actually thinking. Mm-hmm. But even if you're pretty sure about what someone else is thinking, you can't change what other people are thinking. And no amount of like explaining or justifying is going to change that.
Yeah. And when you really do start to let that go, fuck, it's a great feeling. Well, you know, like I at this point in my life, I really could not give a single fuck about what anybody in my in my close orbit thinks about my relationship status or statuses.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't give a fuck what anybody outside of my own social circle thinks.
Yeah.
And I don't fucking care what my family thinks.
And the family
it doesn't matter to me.
We'll always ask questions like, well, you know, what do you mean in the beginning, they might, you know, yeah. What do you mean? What if you want kids? What if, and the answer just may be, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to have those answers either. That's the thing about anarchy or like making things up as you go. You're going with the most information you have available to you at the moment, which is generally what you feel, think, see, hear, taste, smell.
And I think the longer you kind of stick to your guns on that sort of thing, the more the people that do surround, that you do surround yourself with, they just eventually go, well, I don't fucking know. Yeah. And then they just don't bring it up again. And,
then there's a period of awkward jokes about it in your presence. Essentially, or, and then additionally other awkward moments that are not really awkward at all. Like your grandmother just, I think I brought Todd to one of your family things and just walked up to him and she was like, oh, she's giving him a hug. She goes, I don't know who you are. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like I honestly.
Like that time you brought Todd to my sister's and Hudson or one of the boys were like, after we left, one of the boys went, that was really nice of Bridie to bring her dad.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
That was so good.
Oh, it makes me laugh so hard.
But there's something else I wanted to oh fuck. There was another example I wanted to give. It was so silly. Anyway, yeah, whatever. They'll come around or they won't and you'll be okay. The less you have to describe it to, the more space there is for those relationships to evolve into whatever they need to become.
Yeah.
And hopefully that helps.
Yeah, I hope the answers that we just gave there don't come off as too dismissive because I get it. It's fucking hard. It's tough. But really, once you get over that hump and you really start to just not fucking care because you don't have to explain anything to anyone, it gets a hell of a lot easier. Because you don't know it, you don't owe anyone a fucking explanation about who you like, who you don't like, who you love, who you sleep with.
Just tell them you're high maintenance and you're going to need a lot of people to look after you.
Yeah.
That's my joke. But I honestly, you know, I met 34 new people this September in my massage class, and we'll be together for the next couple of years. And I've been in these intense environments before where you start to kind of get to know everything about each other. And not one of them knows anything about my relationship status.
Yeah.
I constantly just refer to my partner, and this amalgamation of Jeremy and Todd is a very like impressive human being.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
He does a lot
of
shit.
He can do it all.
He does it all.
Yeah.
He has like 48 hours in a day.
Yeah. That's really funny.
Isn't that funny? But yeah. I just don't, you know, it's not, all of a sudden, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I've become one of those people who doesn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Whereas at the beginning, it was like my time of being vegan. And the classic joke is like, they just talk about it all the time.
Shut the fuck up about it.
I mean, we started a podcast about it.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
We don't really talk about it with anybody though.
So anyway, I hope that answers your question and thank you for sending that in. And folks, if you have any questions, brain boners or anything at all, turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. And of course that question was brought to you by a lovely patron of ours, patreon.com/turnmeon. If you want to be a part of our Patreon community, this week we are throwing to an episode that we recorded actually a little while ago. This is a recording with Zoe Mendelson, who is one of the authors of Pussypedia, a comprehensive guide, which is it's in the title of the book. It is a very comprehensive guide all about pussies.
And I believe, do you have it up there? Cause I believe she was the singular author, but she worked in a very tight collaboration with her illustrator, who wasn't able to join us for the conversation. But
oh, I see. So Heather is the illustrator.
What's her name?
Heather Corina.
I believe so. Is that the only other name on the cover there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so really well illustrated. So it's like the encyclopedia you wish you had when you, I don't know, maybe hit puberty. Maybe that would have been a good time to get this book. I don't know. It's a pretty great little manual.
Oh, I'm sorry. The illustrator was Maria Conejo.
Okay. Who is the other?
I don't know. It's just it's listed as one of the authors the foreword.
Oh,
my bad. Heather did the foreword.
With a foreword by Heather.
Yep.
Everyone needs a foreword written by Heather.
There we go. So, my bad. So, hope you enjoy this conversation, and you can find Pussypedia wherever you find books. And thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy this conversation, and we'll see you all on the other side. And we are off. Pussypedia. Let's do it. Let's do it. We got a copy of your book.
There. Babe, it's not a book. It's a comprehensive guide.
Well, thank you.
I mean, because we talk to a lot of writers and we talk about a lot of books.
Yeah.
But I think a comprehensive guide, I mean, I think Pedia, putting Pedia in the title probably spells that out for folks. But it's nice to hold a Pedia in my hand again and not just be Googling the wiki.
Yeah, it most certainly does look like a comprehensive guide. It is very thick and very pretty.
Nice and very pink.
Yeah.
And the final version is hard too. It's thick and pink and hard.
All right.
Honestly, I can't stop touching it.
It must be. Is it kind of surreal for you? Is this your first? Is this your first publication of this kind?
Oh yeah, it's. I like want to take the book to bed with me at night. Like I just want to like take it everywhere I go.
Maria
and I, we went out to celebrate on Saturday and. Like we both admitted to each other that we almost brought the book with us because we just and we missed it. Like it just like I keep looking over at it and
that's being so like funny.
I wrote that.
Zoe, give our listeners a bit of a rundown on what Pussypedia is and what it's all about.
So Pussypedia is a encyclopedia of the pussy, and it is an inclusive project, as inclusive as we could. Make it from our limited capabilities and perspectives. It is a bilingual website and it is a book that's right now in English but will come out in Spanish in about a year, and also Ukrainian, Russian, and Italian, which I'm very excited about. It is a project that aims to both inform and to fight shame. It is supposed to be fun. I hope it's fun. I think it's fun.
The table of contents alone is fun.
Yeah.
I just like, I'm like part one, anus, ass crack, and rectum. I'm like, okay, let's jump right in.
I wanted to start with anus no matter what, because I wanted it to be somewhat alphabetical because it's an encyclopedia. And it's not so encyclopedic. I mean, it does have a lot of information in that way it is, but it's also, the book is so full of like personal anecdotes and personal essay. And so I wanted to give it the form of an encyclopedia as much as possible, which is also why it's like a big hardcover book with like, the sort of restyled it after like the 60s like children's encyclopedias, but also just because like anus is funny, like the butt crack is funny and buttholes are funny. So I wanted to start it with that because I want to get off on that foot with the reader. Like it's fun. Let's talk about it. Let's talk so much about the anus that we get bored of it. Like let's you know what I mean? Let's...
Turn Me On Podcast. We'll be back after this short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And it does seem like it just going through the table of contents, like it does seem like you are trying to cover literally every base possible when it comes to the pussy and like and everything going on. Like
really important.
Yeah.
I forgot something. Do you know what it is?
In the book or just.
Is there anything that like seemed like a glaring hole to you guys from the book?
No.
There's nothing on queefing.
Oh. Yeah, because you've got like the like peeing and the urinary tract. Like you've got
it's chills.
Yeah.
Like everything.
You've got everything. But hold on. How did you miss queefing?
I don't know.
It just like went over your head.
Me, yeah, it occurred to me like 2 weeks ago and I was like, oh my god,
second edition. You got to put it the second edition, just for those yeah. just for those queefs.
And also it's like the only Q, it's the only Q word.
Yeah,
really.
I know right.
that's really funny.
I would blame your editor personally.
So what Zoe, I gotta know, like, what this is the first this is your first publication, like how did you end up here? What was the catalyst to finding yourself in a place where you and your partner are writing a giant book to, you know, to tear down shame surrounding the pussy, to educate and to bring awareness and to cultivate conversation? Like what's the origin story here?
Well, I was arguing with my ex-boyfriend about whether or not all women can squirt. Like it was kind of this ongoing argument because I couldn't squirt and he was like, you can. And I was like, stop obsessing about it. Like maybe my body just doesn't do that. It's like all women's bodies can do that. And he was an asshole. So I Googled it and I'm a journalist. So I sort of have like a process of evaluating the information that I find, right?
Sure.
Like, is this good quality information? Can I verify this? And everything that came up was terrible, like horrible. There's no real information here. So I started reading some like medical journal articles and I didn't understand shit. I was like, oh my God, what is this? So I had to, I had to look up like everything in those articles to understand them and then like look up the words in those definitions too. And it was so hard. And I was like, it could not be this hard to learn about our bodies. This is so messed up. This is so incredibly messed up. And
right. Like where's the middle ground? Only,
yeah. And considering that I have been like privileged to have more of an education, you know, than a lot of people, I was like, if it's this hard for me, like this is a really bad state of things. And you know, there are Well, anyway, so I started learning things too. And the other part of it was that I couldn't understand, like, spatially how the parts were related, because to understand squirting, you have to understand like the urethra, vagina, and bladder, like spatial relationship. Mm. And I was looking at 2D images and trying to get it. And I was like, what?
What the fuck am I looking at? Yeah.
Yeah. I really wanted to see a 3D model and I couldn't find one. And I wanted to like put a 3D model online for free. That was sort of how it started. But then also like the things I was learning that night, I stayed up all night learning about like pleasure anatomy. And just what I learned was like really shocking to me and validating. Mm. And so I wanted to do something because all of my work before that had been like very different, but most of it's about helping explain complicated things in clear language and making complex things accessible. So I thought, well, I could do that about pussies. And so I called Maria. Maria and I had wanted to collaborate for a very long time. Like we'd gotten stoned and thought up a ton of really extremely stupid ideas. And I was like, oh, we have to do this project about pussies. And she was like, cool. And I went to her house and we made a proposal. And oh my God, my body, like my whole body felt that it was like a big important thing that we were going to actually do. And I was just like shaking. Like I just like, felt so deeply like I need to do this. I'm going to do this. And Maria is the perfect person for me to do it with because her work gets so deeply at the reasons I had for wanting to do the project. Mm. And it's very emotional. It's like much more about like having an emotional well-being, which I think that you need information or that like you don't need the information to have, but that the information can help you have much.
Right. How speaking of that process of like, of trying to get to the bottom of squirting, actually before I ask this question, what did you figure out?
It's an unanswerable question.
It is. Okay. That's okay. That's what I thought.
It's very hard to prove the negative cases. It's very hard to prove that somebody cannot squirt.
Got you. Okay.
But based on anecdotal evidence, which comes from a few people I know who have gone to squirt shops, which are like workshops where like women are teaching people how to make themselves squirt.
Yeah.
Supposedly everyone squirts in these squirt shops.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I believe it.
Maybe it's like a syncing up type thing. You know, it's like if you go to see a comedy in the movie theater, you're laughing with everyone else. But when you watch a comedy by yourself at home, you're like,
I like the idea. Well, supposedly, like I just read this morning that like after somebody ran a 5-minute mile, a lot more people started to do that. That there's something about like maybe you see all these people around you who didn't think they could squirt, start squirting like you'll squirt.
Yeah. It's contagious. So my question that I'm curious about is, you know, that moment of you and your ex having that argument leading to you trying to find out definitively, can all women squirt? And you've got the two sides of the internet, one which is just like pure trash shit to sift through. And it's like kind of gross and disgusting. And then the other side is like these medical journals that are full of jargon that is so goddamn hard to like decipher and understand a single word that you're reading. And so this wonderful idea comes from that to like create something that's accessible, that gives people a middle ground to like find and educate themselves on all these things that would potentially lead them down one of those two difficult roads. In the work that it took to put Pussypedia together, what was that process like in terms of like, taking a lot of the stuff from, because again, it is very like anatomically focused. Like you're talking, it seems like you're going into like very specific ways and functions of the female anatomy or the anatomy of people with pussies or vaginas. And so, like, was it a challenge to kind of, for lack of a better word, like, dumb down that potentially very complex language
well,
that surrounds
that
stuff?
Understanding the stuff, it's easier for me to like make it into accessible language and explain it in simple ways. Like, I think that's what I'm best at doing. Like, that's right. That's just like something that happens to be easy for me. But the very, very hard part was like reading all these like medical textbooks and studies and trying to understand the stuff in the first place. Like, yeah. Once you've done that work and you actually understand it, it's much easier to explain. But I don't have any science background, so it was really a fight for me. But I felt like kind of like really motivated during it, because the more you read, the more you see how much is not understood. And like, there's just these like really blatant things all over the literature that are just like, well, it's not clear if it's this or this, or, you know, there's really like contradictory information in the literature. And so I felt like very compelled, because like all of that like scarcity is like a like political phenomenon and is like really messed up. And like,
yeah,
I felt like a detective, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. There's some in my other podcast, something that we've talked a lot about is like the amount of misogyny that exists within medical research and science. And it's come up on this show too a few times, but like, that's the reason why, you know, there's so little answers to like things like female pleasure. It's just like, it just hasn't been focused on. It hasn't been looked at. But coming back,
I just was talking to a friend last night who was telling me that she had been having drinks the night before with this woman who researches how like radiation on the cervix affects female pleasure. And she just got this huge, not a fellowship, what's it called when you get a huge like academic grant? And yeah, maybe fellowship, right? And her work's getting turned down from journals because they don't consider female pleasure to be medically relevant.
Yeah, it's so bizarre to me. Like, we're still living in this fucked up time. It's hard to wrap my head around, I guess, because we live in a bit of an echo chamber here on Termion. Mm-hmm. But like, it's so bizarre.
I have a question about this, because I know that like anytime I get into a debate with anyone, let's say I have an ex-boyfriend who wants to debate me on squirting,
you can say me, Bridie. I mean, I know I'm right here, but like, you can say that we debate.
No. But anecdotal evidence is so, it's, I don't know like how everybody feels about it, but I mean, I think it's really important, especially when it comes to sexuality, and because there's been so little like scientific work done on it. And I'm wondering, you know, as a journalist, how do you feel about using anecdotal evidence to prove a point? And like, how do you stand confidently in that?
It's a super, super good question. So I think there's this like very delicate balance that needs to be taken, wherein we cannot totally disregard anecdotal evidence, because a lot of times when we do that, what we're doing is not listening to people. And on the other hand, you can't trust anecdotal evidence as scientific evidence for something. So there's like a lot of cases where this becomes an interesting and important balance to strike. I can think of many. One of them is like birth control side effects. So hormonal birth control side effects. How many people do you know who have told you that they had a terrible experience with hormonal birth control? Mm. More than five, probably, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and I did too.
Me too.
The research does not like consistently, like huge controlled like studies do not show that these side effects, they just keep coming up empty handed. So I get into it in the book of like, well, what is this phenomenon? Why is this happening? And it's one of the cases where I think the anecdotal evidence, it is so overwhelming that we really need to question how we're doing science. And how we've been doing the science is we're looking for depression. Like, we're like, a lot of these studies are coming up empty-handed when they look for actual like clinical depression as a side effect. But there's a really amazing review of studies from, I think, two years ago now, that's looked at all of these like smaller side effects. And so like the conclusion I came to is that I suspect the problem is that we're looking for depression instead of looking for like a composite of all of these smaller side effects that just like compound to make you feel weird and bad. And another problem that this review of studies found is that we're not dividing up kinds of birth controls or doses of birth control when we look for these side effects. So that's like, why would we ever not do that? I mean, that's bad science. That's bad methodology to lump these things together because it's imprecise. And perhaps some kinds of birth control do and others don't cause depression or, you know, all these other side effects. So, you know, I think it's just super important. And like the history of not listening to women in the medical setting, right? So that's what we need to undo when we decide we do want to listen to anecdotal evidence. But then there's other things too. Like a lot of people have experiences that are just not representative of a general phenomenon. And so that's a huge thing. And also like the thing with birth control, a big part of it might be that you hear all these stories and then you have confirmation bias because you're like, oh, I'm feeling bad. It must be because of my birth control because so-and-so had about, you know, and that could be a huge part of the phenomenon, but that doesn't mean the other part's not true as well. So with anecdotal evidence, we can't disregard what people are saying and invalidate their own experiences of their own bodies. And we often can make our science better by questioning it. But we also can't lean on it and totally buy into it. We need to be equally skeptical of both things.
Yeah.
What occurs to me when you say that too is that when we're not being heard, sometimes the symptoms get louder and louder as like a please believe me, or our own need to like prove that it's actually happening because one else is validating it.
When you had bad side effects from your birth control, did you talk to your doctor about it?
No, because I think I just went and switched. I just went and I was like, I don't think this is working for me. I think it's affecting my mood and I wanted to try something non-hormonal and they just, they just allowed me to try it. Luckily, I think for a long time in my early 20s, my healthcare provider were people at the sexual health clinic, you know, specifically, which is a great resource if folks have them nearby. This is like so comprehensive and I haven't made it all the way through, but one thing that caught my eye, because I had just been listening to a podcast called Science Versus, and then the episode title is what it's about, and it's about the G-spot. And I didn't get to the end of that podcast either, but where it was leaning heavily towards is that there was no evidence of a spot. And I see it in your book, and I want to hear what your thoughts are on the G-spot.
This is a really frustrating thing to me. And I understand why so many people are getting it wrong, because it took me like a month of reading to like figure out, suss out what was really going on. But here's the thing. The reason it's so confusing, I think, to journalists who want to cover the issue is that there was a bunch of studies that never should have happened. They were ridiculous wastes of money, and it is astounding that they got funded. But the studies that I'm talking about went to go search for the G-spot in the vagina. They went to go search for some organ or discrete entity. They went to go search for some grouping of cells that was different, and they all kept coming back saying, well, there's nothing there. The reason this is infuriating is because nobody ever, ever said that there was something in the vagina that was the G-spot. No one ever said that. The original text, if they had just gone back and read the original text in which Dr. Ernst Graffenberg, who is such an interesting figure, like go research him. But the reason that what he describes in its entirety, he gives the whole explanation, and it's the urethra. It's that there's erectile tissue around the urethra, just like in a penis, called corpus spongiosum. And it just like in a penis, it's pleasure producing tissue. Mm. And although in almost every single drawing you see of the inside of the pussy, you see the vagina and then you see the urethra as if it's like parallel structure. It's actually embedded in the front wall of the vagina. One side of the urethra is attached to the vagina. So the erectile tissue around it and the two bulbs of the clitoris that are going around the top of it, they're all smushed together and they share nerves and blood vessels. So what's happening is that when the front wall of the vagina is stimulated, it stimulates the erectile tissue around the urethra as well as the whole clitoris. It's all one pleasure producing system. Mm. So the G-spot definitely exists. It's more sensitive for some people than others.
And like the intersection of all of those nerve endings and right. all of those parts that you're speaking
like,
about.
Okay. Here's a similar, like a, something you can compare it to. It's like if they like, okay, so anal sex for men is pleasure producing because the prostate is stimulated, but that doesn't mean there's a prostate in the rectum. The prostate's not in the rectum, it's poking it, right? It's like stimulating it through the wall. It's just the same, right? It's just like you're poking something that produces pleasure.
Right, right. Whereas the G-spot, it's this thought that, or it's this misconceived notion that there is this little button inside the vagina that like you press that
there.
Button
no
at the
that.
Right rate and the right at the right rhythm. It's like ding dong and you got you get a surprise. You get a squirt shop all over you.
Right. no, and actually it is also the prostate. There's glands inside of that erectile tissue called the periurethral glands, and they produce ejaculate. Mm. So not squirt liquid, but ejaculate, like when it's just a little bit of like milky liquid, like it's usually not a lot, that comes from the periurethral glands, which are also called the Skene's glands, but we like periurethral better because why well, call it after, you know, these guys, they discover these things and they want to pee on them.
Is there like in doing the research for the book, was there anything that you came across that really blew your mind like wide open or that really surprised you?
Yeah. Just like how much information there is not.
Yeah.
That's yeah. over and over. I mean, they don't know if that ejaculate that the periurethral glands make come out of the urethra or if they come out of little holes next to the urethra.
Right.
And it's
right.
like,
how do we not know that yet?
Could you somebody get a magnifying glass and have somebody
figure this shit out? Yeah.
And watch them or something?
Yeah.
This cannot be that expensive to find out. But the fact that nobody has funded it because we don't consider it important enough is just utterly patriarchal political bullshit.
It is it is so fucking fascinating that we don't know that. Like, we know so much about the human body, but we can't take the time or get the funding to figure out how that part of the body works. Like, it really does boggle my mind. It's really hard to comprehend. And it's frustrating. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here? What's the point of this? You know? Like I understand like not fully understanding like how, well, I'm talking out of my ass here, but like not fully understanding how certain parts of the brain work or like certain parts of the brain fire. But like, I don't know. I feel like when it comes to genital health and like the anatomy of our genitals, that seems like that should have been figured out fucking eons ago.
No, it's, I mean, we can't even decide where the urethra is. Nobody cares enough. I mean, the study that it was is from 1998 that Helen O'Connell, who described the internal structure of the clitoris, was like, by the way, the urethra is like literally on the vagina. And like, here we are, how many years later, and like nobody's bothered to correct this. And like,
yeah. The anatomy photos, when you see them in sex ed or whatever, it's completely isolated. The system is totally isolated. You got the ovaries, the fallopian tubes, the uterus, the
clitoris, the cervix, the vagina. Disappeared.
There's no clitoris. There's certainly no urethra. There's none of that. It doesn't show any of it. So you just kind of like walk around with these cartoon images of your insides, and not understanding how they integrate with everything.
Exactly.
It's time. It's time to change.
Can you, speaking of change, can you kind of walk us through a new definition of pussy?
Yeah, it's all about variety. It's exactly what you're saying. It's just like, can we think about this as an integrated system? Like, you know, what if we had no word for leg? You know, it's just like foot, shin, calf, knee, thigh. Like, it's a leg. It's like a thing that works together to help you walk. Like all of these muscles and bones and joints, they all work as a system so that you can walk. And in a very similar way, the pussy, it all works together. I mean, these parts are not isolated. They have so much shared function. And the other part of the new definition of pussy is that we wanted to include possible testes in it, because some people have testes, and we wanted to include all of these parts. Like, okay, you have the word vagina, and like that actually only means like the vaginal canal. And I'm all for like language evolves. Like, I don't ever use the word whom. It drives my grandma insane, but I'm like, grandma, nobody says whom anymore.
I have never heard that. What does that mean?
Whom? Yes, you have.
Whom?
Like, yeah, whom?
Oh, like with an M at the end. Like, is this some different word for pussy that I've never heard before?
stick it in your whom, Bridie.
I agree with like language evolving. Like, I'm not like an elitist, like, that's not correct, you know, but like, if we're going to have like a word that means the whole thing, like, I don't want it to be vagina, because vagina means like sword holder. And I'm like, ew, like, fuck that. Like, fuck defining our whole like pleasure center by like what it does in relation to penises. Like, no.
It holds other things. It can hold so many things.
It can hold so many things and do so many things. And it's an amazing thing, and it's not an object of service, and you know, it's not a passive receptacle. And so I don't want to call it a vagina. And like, people are like, oh no, like, say vulva. And it's like, well, if you say vulva, like, you're not including like all of the stuff inside. So we just really needed a word. And I just like the word pussy because it's a bad word.
I love Bridie and I have had this conversation a number of times. I love the word pussy.
Me too.
Bridie, I'm throwing you under the bus here. You don't.
I don't love it in like, I don't love, it doesn't turn me on as like a, like, yeah, put it in my pussy, or
like a
it
dirty
doesn't.
Talk.
It doesn't.
Like, for but use I of dirty
love
talking.
Here, but I love it. I love it in general. The other day I heard like a 72-year-old woman use it, and I was like,
was
heck yeah. She was telling me a story about when she was a younger woman, and she was in a situation with a very inebriated fellow who had grabbed her ankle as she was walking by. He was like kind of passed out on the floor and was moving his hand up her inner leg towards her pussy. And I was like,
whoa.
I know. I mean, that moment sucks, obviously, but to hear her
use that
say
word.
It,
yeah.
I was like, fuck yeah, you go.
Yeah, I think part of like why I wanted to use it, I mean, I say like, oh, it's fun because it's a bad word, but I'm serious. Like, it shocks people.
Yeah.
You know, it still has power to shock people. And I think that like, I don't know if we could like have any objective measure of like how bad a bad word is. But I think like fuck is a worse word than pussy, but pussy is way more shocking to people than the word fuck because it means vagina.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That's why. That's why it's a, it has that power to make people uncomfortable because it carries the whole taboo of like the whole thing, you know? So I like that. Like it's shocking to people because they have to think about for a second. Like I hope it makes people reflect a little bit on like why this word is so shocking and powerful. Mm.
It's also a word that feels good to say. Like it's what, like I know that's subjective, but like it just feels so nice to say it.
Yeah, you smile when you
say
it.
Yeah, pussy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't not think about pussycats. Like I'm like, where did those two words start to, like when did pussy start to happen? And were we already using pussy as an innuendo, you know,
yeah,
when we would
I
talk
read
about
that it was like a really, really, really long time ago. Like I forgot, but like centuries ago, like something like I don't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure.
Is it any relation to pussycat? Like,
yeah.
Okay, all right, great. Because I love hearing it used as an innuendo with that, like with that connotation.
Right.
I find that really charming and sweet. I'm curious to know, like Jeremy asked, if anything surprised you. I'm wondering if you have any favorite information that you found that is like affecting your life personally.
One piece of information that is not something I found during the writing of this book, but before that, but that really changed my life is like, do not wash with soap. Don't soap your shit. I mean, on the outside, yes, but not between your labia. Like, do not soap in there. It really changed my life when I stopped soaping in the crack.
Why don't they tell us that? Why don't they tell us that right off the bat?
I know.
Like, so many prescriptions later.
Yeah, the amount of yeast infections I had before I learned that. I mean, it's like true misery. Having a yeast infection is, at least for me, extraordinarily physically uncomfortable. And the sheer amount of time I spent in the physical discomfort because I was trying to be clean. That's so fucked up. And like when I would get a yeast infection, I would wash it more. And it would get worse. And I couldn't understand why. And the anxiety and the shame that came with that. And like, oh my God, the amount of suffering. Like just, yeah, don't soap your shit. That's my favorite piece of pussy information.
It boggles my mind. I saw my not to throw her under the bus, but I saw my 19-year-old niece like buying particular like soaps that are marketed
like
for your pussy.
Soap. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, really? Still is this happening? Cause like UTIs, yeast infections, bacterial vaginosis, like all of these things that you kind of have suffered through on your own. And like the women, the older women in my life, you know, just being like, well, that's part of having a vagina and that's it. That's it. That it seems so, you realize how much we are still in the dark ages when you look at just a generation ago and what they're willing to, what information they have and are willing to share. It's like, we've definitely got, this knowledge was once known and then lost and we're finding it again.
Mm-hmm. So Zoe, Pussypedia, it's coming out August 3rd. Where can people get their hands on it when it's out? How can people follow you and what you're continuing to get up to in your life and what's next?
I don't know in Canada.
We can't find you in Canada?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, like, I think you can get it off the US version of Amazon, but I don't want to tell people to buy off Amazon.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know, like, is like IndieBound a thing in Canada? Is like bookshop.org a thing in Canada? I don't know.
If it's .org, it sounds like it's probably.
Well, we can get to the bottom of this.
You have to go to your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you.
That's the fucking jam. That's it right there. Go to your local bookstore and demand that they bring Pussypedia in and put it in their storefront window.
Yes, and tell them if they're not carrying the book.
Yeah, then they ain't shit.
Request it from your libraries. Yeah. You know, I don't know if people know this, but you can also call your libraries up and say, I'd like to have this book brought in. Yeah. And they can do those kinds of things. And yes. A lot of times they're really willing to because they are the encyclopedia for.
If you got 10 friends to call the library and ask for the same book, the library goes, nope, 10 people want it. We got to bring it in. Mm-hmm. And then that's it.
So go ahead and do that, and it's be a service to your community as well.
And then in terms of following my work, it's my Instagram is youngzo kazaya, but it's like long, like I don't want to like have to spell it and stuff. I don't know.
We'll put it in the show notes for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
are you working on something else, like part two or? Or a new book?
I just want to go make some money now. Yeah. I want to have a baby someday so I can't keep being a martyr activist idiot. I have to join capitalism now. And yeah.
We all got to do it. We got to participate.
Yeah. At one point.
Writing about pussies is not a very lucrative endeavor.
Yeah, hey, but you know what? Maybe writing about queefing is. And there's only one way to find out.
Maybe I'll write a whole book about
it. Yeah. Well, Zoe, this has been really fun. Thanks for waking up nice and early all the way down to Mexico City to take time to sit down and shoot the shit with us. This has been
great. It was lovely. It was really nice to meet you guys. If you ever come down to Mexico City, please write me.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. All right, there you go, folks. Hope you enjoyed that. That was our conversation with Zoe all about Pussypedia.
Indeed.
Thanks for tuning in this week. We really appreciate all of the support. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating or review. Hit follow on the Spotify app. And otherwise, if you want to support the podcast even further, patreon.com/turnmeon.
That is correct. And I promised an announcement last week of the next date for my human connection through touch workshop. If you weren't at the last one or you didn't hear anything about the last one, you should know that it is a workshop. We'll do it a little shorter this time, probably 90 minutes, so an hour and a half or maybe even 75 of partner work. And what I mean by partner work is anyone who you feel comfortable giving and receiving touch to. Not in a sexual way. This could be your mom or your sibling or your bud who you have an intimate but non-sexual relationship with. You can also have an intimate and sexual relationship with whoever you choose to attend with. And it's really just like an hour or a little more spent on with some hands-on connection meant to enhance our sense of well-being. And that date, my friends, save the date, my friends, will be November 14th. That's a Sunday, November 14th. Save the date. And by next week, I'll remind you and let you know how you can book your spot. Patrons who supported us over the summer, you'll get a Patreon special code so you can receive this workshop for free. And I can't wait to do it again. I can't wait to have you all there.
It's going to be so fun. That is it for this week, folks.
Until next week.
Go touch yourself.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.